नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अकारण्य भारतो गदितम् थम ऊचुर देवसत्रवा देवान् प्रति कृतामर्षा दैथेया नाथिकोविदा। Their master's statement, the envious asuras, who were enemies of the demigods and were not very expert in their dealings, advised Kamsa as follows. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There are two different types of men, the asuras and the suras. Dvau bhuta sargo lokesmin daiva asura eva cha Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asuras tad viparyaya. From the Padma Purana. Those who are devotees of Lord Vishnu Krishna are suras or devas, whereas those who are opposed to the devotees are called asuras. Devotees are expert in all transactions. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvayur gunais tatra samasate sura. Therefore they are called kovida, which means expert. Asuras, however, although superficially showing expertise in passionate activities, are actually all fools. They are neither sober nor expert. Whatever they do is imperfect. Moghasha moghakarmana. According to this description of the asuras, given in Bhagavad Gita, whatever they do will ultimately be baffled. It was such persons who advised Kamsa because they were his chief friends and ministers.
Om Gyantimidandasya Gyananjanatsala.
After hearing their master's statement, the envious asuras, who were enemies of the demigods and were not very expert in their dealings, advised Kamsa as follows. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa, Text 30. We have read in the previous verses how Kamsa, with all of his power, influence, wealth, with all of his yogic perfections, his plans apparently were quite successful. Bhagavad Gita tells us that if we want to be peaceful in this world, we have to give up the desire to be the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that as long as we think in terms of aham mameti, that I am this body, those things in relation to the body are mine, then we become entangled in situations that inevitably lead to suffering. Nashito vidyate bhavo. Those who know the truth understand what is real is permanent. And whatever is temporary is unreal. The word Maya means that which is not. In the Vaishnava philosophy, what does it mean by unreal? It doesn't mean something doesn't exist. It means we don't understand what it actually is. The body exists. What is unreal is the misconception that I am this body. The soul, the eternal soul, mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, is part and parcel of Krishna, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. When the eternal soul identifies itself with this temporary body, that is illusion. That is Maya. So what is actually unreal is the misconception. To think that we are the proprietor, controller, or enjoyer is the very foundational basis of illusion and the root cause of all suffering. These pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, they teach us a very powerful lesson that however successful we may be, we will fail if we don't build our success on the foundation of truth. So here is Kamsa. He did years of severe austerity to get such tremendous power, each arm with the strength of 10,000 elephants. Even these great mystics that we read about later in Srimad Bhagavatam, Putana, Agasura, Bakasura, Aristasura, Keshi, Pralambasura, incredible powerful yogis these people were. But in fact, they were all subordinate to Kamsa. Kamsa had defeated them all. And for most of them, he defeated them so severely that they either were to die at his hands or surrender to being his subjects and to do his will. So this is the power of Kamsa. He proved himself. And all of his plans appeared to be very fruitful. It was his desire to steal the throne from his own father, Ugrasena. Ugrasena was the commander of all the armies, Bhoja dynasty. Kamsa conquered him, took control of all the armies, took control of not only the Bhoja dynasty, the Andaka dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, so many dynasties. Conquered all of them. Put his own father in prison. when he heard that voice that exclaimed the eighth child of his sister would kill him, he was quite successful in his efforts. He put them all in prison. Harivol Premdasji. We have three special guests today. We have Urmila Mataji Devi, and we have Yadubar Prabhu, and we have Professor David Haberman Premdasji. Let us very enthusiastically welcome them by chanting Harivol. Much louder, please. Thank you. Yes, he successfully killed six of the children. He successfully kept his sister in prison. He successfully conquered all the other asuras. He successfully was conquering the entire world. So it appeared for many, many years that his atrocities were quite successful. But because he was building his so-called empire on the foundation of greed, envy, and illusion, it was just a matter of time till everything would crumble. We are speaking about Kamsa in today's verse. Well, sometimes we see in this world murderous dictators, terrorists, business people who try to earn by very immoral methods of greed and envy, sometimes even violence, how they are so successful and they have so much. And simple, nice, just like Kamsa, and simple, nice people like Devaki and Vasudev are suffering so bad. Why is that? Maybe sinful activity isn't so bad after all. Maybe piety is just not so practical. We just do the needful in this world. But Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining every message that we could possibly need to know in such powerful ways. If we simply go deep into Srimad Bhagavatam, we could find the solutions to every level of life. Kamsa had everything, but he had no happiness. He had no peace. He had no love. He was fearful, arrogant, greedy, didn't know how to respect. He did respect Narada Muni, but it wasn't real respect. It was more like business respect. He wanted something from that Muni. So he gave him the respect as like a price. So here we find Kamsa had killed six of the children of Devaki mercilessly, right in front of her eyes. Kept them in prison, in chains. And the eighth child was born. That's really the only one he was really afraid of. The others were subsequent, and he murdered them
the eighth child. He couldn't sleep at night waiting for that child to be born. He had to kill him. He had the guards vigilantly watching. And the moment the child was born, the order was, tell me, and I will massacre it. Krishna appeared by his own sweet will. He took the form of a little baby. By his own mystical arrangements, with the help of Yoga Maya, Vasudev brought that little baby across Yamuna to Gokul, Mahavan, where he exchanged with the little girl Yoga Maya. And little Yoga Maya Devi, little infant, tender infant baby. As soon as she came back into the cell, the doors locked, the chains clasped Vasudev again, and she cried. And she cried loud, and she woke up the guards, and everybody woke up, and the guards immediately ran to Kamsa and gave him the message, and he didn't hesitate. He ran with all of his powers to that prison cell. He didn't want to waste a second. He didn't want to take any chance. Kamsa was absolutely thorough in his plot to kill this child. But however thorough we are, on the material plane, we are going to be defeated. He picked up that baby to dash her against the rock until she was like the filling in a samosa. He was about to just smash her into a paste. But as soon as he lifted her up, she just slipped out of his hand. Just like all of our plans in this world, by the power of Maya, are going to slip right out of our hands, even if our hands are as strong as Kamsa's. And she went into the sky and became Durga. Suddenly this little baby was a beautiful goddess riding on a lion, holding many weapons with her hands. Kamsa, you are a fool. Nobody called Kamsa a fool. The child that is meant to kill you is already born somewhere else. For the first time in his life, Kamsa was defeated. And he didn't know what to do. But he became a little sober. The ahankar, the false ego, is like a fever. And in the fever of that ahankar or false ego, we become delirious. We can't really see things clearly. Everything is completely whirling and swirling and hazy by that ahankar, that ego. And by the power of that storm of the ego, we believe what the ego wants us to believe. And we see through the lens of that ego. Srila Prabhupada explains, if you have yellow-colored glasses, or in India we say spectacles, everything looks yellow. If we have red-colored glasses, everything looks red. Now, if we don't realize that we're wearing spectacles, we think everything is red or everything is yellow.
Premandana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, Brahma Samhita tells, when our eyes are ornamented with the salve of prema or love, then we can see Krishna in his beautiful form of Shamsundar playing his flute. But the ego makes us believe, even makes us convinced of our own illusions. So here was Kamsa, never defeated, successful in every way. And now he's told that the child that is going to kill you is born somewhere else. And there was nothing Kamsa could do to that Durga Devi in the sky. So those yellow-colored glasses of his ego were temporarily shattered. And then he started to see, what have I done? I killed my own nephews, 6 of them, consecutively. I broke the heart of my sister and brother-in-law. I've committed such sinful deeds. And Kamsa was a profound philosopher. And a powerful yogi. And everything became clear to him. And here was this most cruel of all cruel people. He started to cry. He fell at the feet of Devaki and begged forgiveness. And then, as we explained in the last few classes, along with his begging forgiveness, he spoke very accurate philosophy that was totally misplaced. Philosophy could liberate us, or it could justify the worst bondage. Srila Prabhupada explained, philosophy is useless if we don't have good character. Philosophy is meant to transform our character into a divine state. And it could be understood properly by those who are in a divine state. So Kamsa was speaking to them about the soul is eternal. And ultimately, everything is coming by the power of destiny, karma. And actually, I wasn't the one that killed your children. It was destiny. I was just the instrument. It's true. But the fact is, he was 100% responsible. But he didn't want to take the blame. He wanted to put it on destiny. Whatever bad things I've done, it's actually your fault. This is the most irresponsible, wicked manipulation of the truth. But as we see in this world, when people manipulate the truth, it can become an incredibly powerful weapon of evil. That's what the ahankar, the false ego, does. The hatred, the violence, the terrorism, the judgmentalism, and all this stuff that comes along with religion. It's not about religion. It's simply about the false ego. And to give absolute authority to our false ego, we take scripture
And we manipulate the words of the great acharyas. It's been happening for a long time. Back in Satya Yuga, Hiranyakashipu did it. He was also an incredible philosopher. Some of the philosophy he teaches, we quote the verses in our class because they're so accurate and so right on. But the problem is, he was teaching Vedic philosophy for the purpose of inspiring his people to help him kill Vishnu, who happened to kill his younger brother, Hiranyaksha. And Kamsa is speaking excellent philosophy to take the blame off himself to a large extent. But still, he was crying, and he was at the feet of Devaki. Now that's pretty humble for Kamsa, to be at the feet of his sister. And Devaki, Vasudev, they were so gracious and so kind, they forgave him. They said, yes, Kamsa, it's true, it was our destiny. They totally, from the core of their hearts, forgave him for everything. That was their greatness. And he recognized their greatness. He was actually in a relatively enlightened state because the fever went down. The balloon of his ego, that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, and I'm the proprietor, burst. So he released them with a repentant heart. And that's where we come to today's verse. Where after releasing him, he met with his associates, who Shukadev Goswami explains they were envious. They were the enemies of the devas. They were not expert in their dealings. And they gave advice to Kamsa. Now, they were his subordinates, but they were very powerful. And sometimes, powerful people, they're extremely dependent on their subordinates. They're willing to kill them in a second or destroy them one way or another, socially, emotionally, philosophically, or physically. But when they're in a weak condition, they're the only ones who really believe in me. So I need them. Yes, because he wants to be the controller. These people actually believe in me. They're on my side. And they're about to tell Kamsa, no. They were praising him. This is his vulnerability. He wanted to be the Lord, the Master, and these people could control him because they, as long as they perpetuated his illusion that he was the Lord and Master. And he needed that. So why should you be afraid? You are Kamsa. Even the great demigods, the devas, fear you. You have already defeated all of them in battle. Indra, Vayu, Agni, Surya. When you fight them in battle, you break their limbs, and either they die at your hands or they cowardly run away.
And as far as the three most prominent, supreme of the devas, you have nothing to fear from them, because Lord Vishnu is hiding in a solitary place in the hearts of the yogis. And Shiva, he's retired and gone to the forest. And Brahma, he's totally absorbed in meditation and austerities, tapasya. Therefore, they're not around. They won't bother you. And all the other devas are subordinate to your power. If you lift an eyebrow, they will tremble in fear. So why should you be afraid? If this child is born somewhere else, then our advice to you, Kamsa, is we will go out on your behalf. Just give us the order, and we will kill every child that has been born in the last 10 days everywhere. That was the end of his enlightened state. It's very much in this history. It's symbolic. It's an analogy of what happens to us. Many of us, like Kamsa, little mini Kamsas. We want to be the controller. We want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the proprietor. Also, Janasya Mohoya Mahamameti. We think in terms of I am this body, and whatever is in relation to this body is mine. And in this way, we exploit rather than serve. Divine nature is to serve. The demoniac nature is to exploit. To not see how everything is the property of Krishna. And everything should be used in harmony with the will of Krishna. But somehow or other, coming in association with devotees who are represented in this analogy by Vasudeva and Devaki, we become sober. And we actually change our ways. It's the power of satsang. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva sastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. That all the great scriptures broadcast that even a moment's association, lava matra. It's explained in the shastras that a lava matra means 1/12 of a second. Even a moment's association with a sadhu, with a saintly person, can open the doors to liberation, to perfection. Mahatseva dwaram ahurava moktes tamodwaram yoshita sanghi sangam. By serving great souls, the doors to liberation are opened wide. But by hearing from and associating with people too much addicted to these egoistic material ways, then the doors to ignorance and darkness are opened. So this is so crucial. We are living in illusion. We associate with devotees. We become enlightened. But if we are careless and we don't keep that powerful association and we allow ourselves to be influenced by that lower type of association that's trying to reconfirm our egoistic misconceptions, then we become swayed again into the path of darkness. Years before, in this story, when Vasudeva brought his first son, Kirtiman, to Kamsa, because he promised, in order to save Devaki, Vasudeva said, you want to kill your sister, but she's innocent. It's her children you're afraid of. I promise I'll bring you all her children, but let my wife live. Kamsa trusted Vasudeva. That was the power of his devotion, that even such a demon, his life was at total risk. But he trusted Vasudeva that much. And sure enough, Vasudeva brought the first baby. And Kamsa was affected by Vasudeva. What a saint. He actually kept his word at the cost of his own beloved child. I have nothing to worry from this child. It's the eighth one. Take him home. Be happy. But Vasudeva knew that because of Kamsa's associates, because he couldn't control his mind and senses, anything could happen. And in that case, it wasn't demons that put him in that illusion. It was the greatest of all bhaktas, Narada Muni. Narada Muni came to the house of Vasudeva, to the palace of Kamsa. Kamsa knows Narada Muni. Everybody knows him. He's been around a long time. So Kamsa wanted his blessings for his own nefarious purposes. So he actually honored Narada, gave him a nice city place, gave him gifts, bowed down and gave him nice words of praise. And Narada Muni, he has his own internal understanding of Krishna's desire. He knew that these six children that Devaki would be having were the sons of Maricha, who were actually cursed to take birth as demons. Not demons, but they were demons in the past. And this was to be their last birth. And they didn't want to be born and stay in this world. They wanted to return to their heavenly abode. So Narada, understanding their desire, they wanted to die as soon as they were born, so they didn't have to live in this earthly planet. So he was instrument of their wish. And at the same time, he wanted to expedite Krishna's arrival in this world. Because Narada Muni is paradukaduki. He's compassionate to every living being. And the original Supreme Personality of Godhead was going to descend from Goloka, the spiritual world. It happens only once in a day of Brahma. Every 8 billion years, 8,640,000,000 years to be precise, according to the Shastra, Krishna comes in his original transcendental form to perform his leelas. So this is a very special thing that Narada Muni, he wanted Krishna to come soon. So he told Kamsa, I was just traveling and I came upon a very interesting meeting that I think you'll be interested in. The demigods were meeting and the sages and the rishis. And they were all discussing, they were talking about you, Kamsa. They were talking about you.
And it came to be that Vishnu was going to appear as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He's going to appear in the Yadu dynasty. And the demigods were also going to appear in the Yadu dynasty for the purpose of killing you. And another bit of information. In your last life, your name was Kalanemi, and you were fighting against the Devas, and Vishnu killed you. And he's going to come back to kill you. And your enemy, the demigods, are all going to be taking birth in the Yadu dynasty to kill you. So I just wanted to give you this information. Please be aware and take all precautions. And then Narada Muni Bhajayi Vina Radhikaramana Name played his Vina, chanting the names of Krishna. He went on to the next place. So Kamsa put Devaki and Vasudev back in prison. That's the result of the highest association. Sadhu Sangam. Satsang. I mean, what greater sadhu than Narada Muni? So we have to understand very deeply what is happening. These scriptures, you see, the nature of the human mind is we like things to be black or white. Yes? But the problem is, there's not many things that are black or white. Krishna's kind of black, and Radharani's kind of, and Balaram is kind of, is white. Krishna and Balaram are black and white. That's. Other than that, in this world, there are truth is something very deep. Truth is very profound. We oftentimes we just have this tendency. We want to bring truth down to the level that we, with our tiny little infinitesimal brains, can categorize it and say, "I know." Hare Krishna, Achintya Shakti. Krishna is unknowable. Krishna can never be known by our categorizing philosophy. Krishna is only known by his grace. Philosophy we need urgently in order to do the right thing. Without philosophy, we don't know, you know, Vivek, the discrimination between what is favorable and what is unfavorable, what is real is unreal. But ultimately, sam siddhir haritoshanam. When Krishna is pleased with us, Krishna reveals himself. Bhaktyatvananyayashakyasaham evam vidurjana. Krishna tells in Gita, I can only be understood as I'm standing before you by unconditional, unalloyed bhakti or devotion. There's no other way. We can understand other aspects of the Absolute Truth, but to understand Krishna is only possible by his grace. And his grace comes sarvadharman parityaja. When sharanagati, when we actually surrender. And essentially, surrender means to surrender our false ego. To surrender our possessions. To surrender our abilities. Could actually infatuate our false ego. Real surrender. Lord Chaitanya taught us, Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasa hishnuna amanina manadena kirataniya sadahari. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree,
offering all respect to others and expecting none in return. That is the surrender that will please Krishna so much that when we chant his holy names, Krishna will manifest his form, his pastimes, his abode, his qualities, his everything through the name. And then we cannot stop chanting. Param drisva nivartute, it's the higher taste that we're all seeking. That is by grace. The infinitesimal can only understand the infinite by the grace of the infinite. How is it that the infinitesimal jiva can understand the infinite of Krishna? Because Krishna is infinite with achintya shakti, Krishna has the power to reveal himself to any one of us, anytime. So by Narada Muni's influence, Kamsa put Devaki and Vasudev back in prison and started killing all their children, and the children were happy because they wanted to be. They didn't want to hang out in this material, earthly planet. They were from a higher place. They were cursed to do this, and Narada Muni was eliminating their curse. It was a beautiful thing. So sometimes the association of saints and the association of asuras, we have to really understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. But the message is the power of association. Srila Prabhupada explained, what you associate with is what you become in your consciousness. If you put an iron rod in fire, it glows hot like fire. And you may say, it's still an iron rod, it's not fire. Then you touch it, intellectual, scientific professor, touch it. Still iron, touch it, sir. It burns like fire. It's fire. And yet it's still iron, too. If you put that same iron rod in ice, it becomes cold like ice. Touch it, professor. No, no. And it's a simple example you're laughing about, but it's not so funny when we become the iron rod. What we associate is what we become. The company we keep is so powerful. It affects the way we think. It affects what we value, what we prioritize. It affects the choices we make moment by moment. Mahatsevam dwaram ahurava muktes tamo dwaram yoshita sanghi sangam. So it's so very crucial that we associate with saintly people. It's not a detail. It's foundational. Srila Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, our professor David Haverman, Premdasji, he translated the entire Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu into English and describes all the various crucial principles of bhakti. And he explained the five most crucial: chanting the holy names of the Lord, studying, reading, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deities, Tulsi,
visiting holy places like Vrindavan, Mathura, Dwarka, and association of saintly people. And without the association of saintly people, none of the others is sustainable. Because even if we associate with saintly people a little and start on the path of bhakti, we see Kamsa, he was a little enlightened by Devasudevan Devaki, but as soon as he went back and started getting his ego pumped up again by his so-called subordinates, he became more vicious than ever before. They told Kamsa, just give us the order. We are on your side. We are your well-wishers. We are for you in every way. We have total faith and confidence in your prowess. Just give us the order. We will slaughter the cows. We will murder the Brahmins. We will devastate the holy places. We will persecute the devotees. And by doing, and we will, with your powers, we will conquer the devas. And then Vishnu will die. If the demigods can't give oblations of ghee because there's no more cows, there's no more Brahmins, what will he have to eat? And because he loves his devotees so much, he lives for his devotees. If the devotees are persecuted and tortured, Vishnu will die. This is our plan. Just tell us, we'll do it. We'll murder all the children. We'll do all this chaos. This is real terrorism. And influenced by them, Kamsa said, yes. They put Vasudevan Devaki back in jail. What a rascal. They just forgave him for all his atrocities. But instead of being influenced by them, he was influenced by these others. This is the power of association. Srila Prabhupada explained the whole purpose of all these temples is just to give people the opportunity to associate with devotees. But as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and our acharyas have explained, association of devotees doesn't mean associating people with a particular type of dress. Just putting on tilak and saris and dhotis and carrying beads and bags doesn't make us devotees. A devotee is based on our character. Bhaktivinoda himself, we see photos of him where he was dressed in quite elegant dresses as a magistrate in the British courts. But the greatest Paramahamsa Babaji's were coming to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from him. So yes, the dress and the tilak and all of these things are very, very important traditional ways of helping us to actually live by the principles and the character of devotees. But it's our character that's all important. So when people come to the temples, what is going to transform their hearts? The deities, Sri Radha Gopinath, they'll have their darshan, but do they really understand what they're having darshan of? Do they really have faith? Adoshadatata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya. It's through association that we have faith in the deity. It's through association we have faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name and the holy places. Vedavyas writes in the 12th canto that a symptom of Kali yuga is when you go to a holy place to take a bath in the river without associating with the holy people there. That's a symptom of Kali. You go to a holy place, but what do you really see? We can't see holy places with these eyes made out of flesh and water. We see through our hearts. And our hearts enable us to see through the words of the great souls. When we see through the eyes of those who see, then we actually see. That requires faith. And that faith comes by associating with people who have that faith, deep faith, in the right thing. This is the foundation of our spiritual lives. And it is our responsibility to develop those qualities. Even philosophy, we can't understand unless we have the right character. Krishna told Arjuna, you can understand this message because you are not envious. Very powerful. We could memorize the entire Bhagavad Gita and recite it, the entire text three times every day our whole life and not understand a word of it. We can be giving Bhagavad Gita katas and 100,000 people come to every one of our katas and we leave them totally spellbound by our analogies and our symbols and our philosophical, logical explanations. And we may not understand a word of it if we're envious. It's all superficial. Krishna tells Arjuna, you can understand this Gita because you are my friend and you are my devotee. He doesn't say because you're a scholar. He says because you're my friend and devotee. And Jiva Goswami and all these people who were the greatest of all scholars, they could explain the Gitas and the Bhagavat and all the holy Vidaishta Sarvaraham Eva Vidyo Vedanta Vidyo. Krishna says, by all the Vedas, I'm to be known. I'm the compiler of the Vedanta. So yes, these greatest of scholars, they can transform our hearts because they had no envy and because they were the Lord's friend and devotee. And this is what we must strive for. When we as a congregation, when we as a family are non-envious toward each other, because if you're envious toward each other, that's an indirect way of being envious toward Krishna. A devotee is just not envious. And therefore, is Krishna's friend. Suhrita Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the benefactor and friend of everyone. And if we really trust that, then we also become Krishna's friend and devotee. Then Krishna reveals that beautiful story of Sri Rangam, where the greatest scholars in all of India were gathered together in a courtyard every day to discuss the scriptures. And that simple, illiterate Brahmin sat to read the Bhagavad Gita. But he was reading, his pronunciation was really bad. from a material perspective. And he couldn't understand anything he was reading. But he read every day. And the other scholars ignored him. They may have ridiculed him. They may have criticized him. But he did it every day. Why did he keep going back to that high seat of learning to read the Bhagavad Gita if he knew he was doing it all wrong and nobody respected him at all for doing it? But Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna himself, the author of the Gita, he happened to see this Brahmin and he came right up to him. "Please tell me what you're reading and why." He said, "I'm reading Gita." He said, "I don't know what I'm reading. I may say it right or wrong. I don't know the difference. I don't really understand any of the words. But my guru told me to read this in this place every day. So whatever anybody thinks, I'm trying to please my Gurudev." Lord Chaitanya said, "Well, if you don't understand what you're reading, or whether it's right or wrong, why are you crying?" He said, "Because the whole time I'm trying to recite it, I'm just seeing Krishna, who has a beautiful complexion like a dark monsoon cloud. And he's holding the reins of Arjuna's chariot. Krishna's taking the role of the servant of his own devotee as he's speaking the truths of Bhagavad Gita. And this image of Krishna, so merciful, so kind to his devotee, it's imprinted within the core of my heart. And that is why I cry." Lord Chaitanya picked up that Brahman and embraced him and said, "You are the true knower of the Bhagavad Gita." And with that embrace, he gave him prema bhakti, the highest perfection of ecstatic love for the Lord. He didn't give it to the others. He gave it to him. Because of his attitude. Sanatana Goswami explains how pure devotional service, or Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami, pure devotional service, prema bhakti, shuddha bhakti, is very rare. Why is it so rare? Because when Krishna gives shuddha bhakti, he gives himself. Krishna is purchased by those who have unalloyed devotion. Krishna is subordinate to the love of his devotee. So Krishna is not going to give it easily. But if one is sincere, serious, and has no ulterior motives, Krishna easily gives pure devotional service. This is what we must strive for. Through our scholarship, through our sadhana, through our seva, through our puja, through our prayers, for this pure devotion without envy, for Krishna's satisfaction. And when we can live together, helping each other for this purpose, not being competitive or envious due to the ego, and letting the ego justify it as, "I'm smashing this person to defend the highest principles of Dharma." The ego can justify anything. We have to be very careful what actually pleases Krishna. And when we help each other to strive for this perfection of shuddha bhakti, then we are actually a real satsang. We are really a sangha.
then our temples, our congregation, are actually representing our beloved founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, and the previous Acharyas. Then we're actually bringing people into the Leela of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. That is all important. This is the message of Srila Prabhupada's books. To give the book is a fantastic service. But to live the book along with it is what Prabhupada really expects of us. It's what Krishna is waiting for. And for that, we need each other. It's another form of false ego to think that I can do it without the association of devotees. Rupa Goswami tells that in order to follow the principles of bhakti, satsang is so important. And in this particular verse, we see how this very sweet I think it was coming from Krishna to tell me that I'm over time. And your laugh is the confirmation. And it has just been reconfirmed. So Kamsa is, he's a great teacher of bhakti. The story of Kamsa teaches what we should not do and what happens if we do what we should not do. After all, Kamsa was Krishna's uncle. He was a relative. How would you like to be? Krishna appears once every 8,640,000,000 years. How would you like to be his uncle? That's a pretty rare position. But still, due to bad association, what kind of uncle? His whole life was obsessed in destroying his nephew. And he seemed so successful. Everything was just going his way. He had his wealth, he had his power, he had his pleasures, he had everything. All of his all adversities were either killed or imprisoned or persecuted. So yes, why do good things happen to bad people? And Vasudev Devaki, why do bad things happen to good people? But there's a saying, the mills of time, they grind slow, but meticulously fine. Arivo. It's just a matter of, and Krishna tells in Gita, time I am. So we're just going to begin with Vrindavan Leela. And Kamsa was a very important person. All these incredible Putana, Shakatasura, Trinavarta, Bakasura, Agasura, Vatsasura, Pralambasura, Vyomasura, Aristasura, Keshi,
These are just some of the asuras that came to Vrindavan. They were all sent by Kamsa. And we're just relishing in great ecstasy the story of Krishna killing these demons. And even the cowherd boys, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that when Krishna and the gopas would play, they would be so absorbed in playing with Krishna. Can you imagine playing with Krishna in the pastures and forests of Vrindavan? And this is the internal Vrindavan, without the high-rise five-star hotels and the pollution in the Yamuna and, you know, people throwing garbage all over this place and responding to nature on the footpath. This is Goloka, descended to earth, Gokula Vrindavan, beyond the veneer of the illusions of this world, playing with Krishna. Every type of game was, the play was simply an exchange of ecstatic love. There was no way they could stop their games. It was irresistible. Krishna was being conquered by his devotees. His devotees were being conquered by Krishna, and all the devotees were being conquered by each other. The material world we want to conquer, but the goal of bhakti is to be conquered by Krishna's beauty, his sweetness, his love, and the beauty and sweetness of love of all of his devotees. But at the same time, Yashoda and the different mothers, Rohini, they would send lunch for Krishna, but they would not, they were too engrossed in playing. So by Yogamaya's arrangement, she somehow or other induced the demon sent by Kamsa to come just before lunchtime every day. So then Krishna would, he would really make a nice appetite for him to be killing these gigantic yogi demons in these immense forms, Bakasura. He was a crane, gigantic bird. They were just sitting on bank of Yamuna. The calves were drinking the water at Kadiravan, and the boys were drinking the water, and they were resting, and they saw this incredible, gigantic mountain, like a white mountain. And suddenly they saw this gigantic mountain moving. And within an instant, boom, the mountains met. Incredibly gigantic beak swallowed Krishna. And he went into Bakasura's throat. And all the, this really builds an appetite. Seeing Krishna eaten really builds your appetite. So the cowherd boys were weeping and crying and beside themselves. Krishna's eaten, and even the demigods, their appetite. They, our Lord, the Lord of our life has been devoured by this Bakasura. Krishna, he's the sword. His bodily rays are the Brahma Jyoti, the Brahman. That the all-pervading light that extends everywhere in all of existence is Krishna's bodily rays. So that Brahma Jyoti started burning Bakasura's throat. And ultimately it burned so much, I'm not going to get into sound effects on this one. But can you imagine the sound of this demon, the size of a mountain, vomiting? It must have been tumultuous. And he vomited out Krishna. And then he decided with his massive pointed beak to stab Krishna to death. He stabbed and stabbed and stabbed. And Krishna, He was just playing with this person. He was dodging, or he was like dancing around. And Vakasura, and everybody's watching. And Krishna's just missing. He was making it so he was just by millimeters missing Krishna. And it was just too much. All the devotees were about to die to see Krishna in this. He was just a little boy, little tiny boy. So Krishna took his beak and put his little soft lotus foot on one beak, and then took his beautiful little soft lotus hands with the other beak and bifurcated them. Haribol. And everybody was very much, demigods were showering flowers, and the cowherd boys were jumping up and down, crying out, "Well done, well done." And then they were very, then they realized it's time for lunch. So they'd gather on the bank of the Yamuna or in the forest, and they'd make circles around Krishna, and they'd open up their lunch boxes, and they'd have nice prasad. So Kamsa was facilitating all of these wonderful pastimes. He didn't know it. But Krishna can use even the worst person to actually facilitate the devotees to serve him and please him. And from another dimension, from what we're speaking today, even the most unfavorable situations, ultimately, if a devotee sees Krishna's inner purpose within our hearts, tate nukam pam susamikshamano, we understand that these, even the worst atrocities can help us to take shelter of Krishna even more, even better. If we have the vision. And for that vision, we need the Srimad Bhagavatam. We need the satsang of devotees who are striving for that common purpose of trying to seek Krishna everywhere. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, don't try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in a way that Krishna wants to see you. Now, how does that connect with this idea of seeing Krishna everywhere? It means seeing Krishna everywhere is seeing the opportunity to serve Krishna in every situation, everywhere, in a favorable way with love and devotion. Is there any questions or comments? Yadubar Prabhu, would you like to speak something? Please send the microphone to my beloved senior worshipable God brother.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. As always, Hare Krishna. Just this purport, I had a very, the purport explains the word expert, and in Sanskrit it's kovida. So Srila Prabhupada actually gave an instruction in his last days in Vrindavan using that same word. And it was actually the last thing he said to me. He said a very interesting thing. He said, those who are expert in one thing have the tendency to be expert in all things. Now becomes expert in Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada at that time could hardly speak. It was not very long after that he passed away. So this was a wonderful lesson. You know, we can become expert in so many things to become expert in this world. But what is the use of that if we're not Krishna conscious? So, thank you very much.
Urmila Devi, would you like to speak something, please? Microphone is just now coming. I hope.
Hi, Krishna. I was also meditating on the expert. When Prabhupada was speaking in, I believe, 76 here in Mumbai, he wanted to establish a brahmacharya ashram and a gurukula for children. And he was, in his speaking, he kept going back and forth between one and the other. When he was describing the ideal brahmacharya ashram and the ideal gurukula, he was describing them in the same way. And one of the points he made is that the devotee should be expert. In that case, he used the word daksha. And he said that means that they should know everything of something and something of everything. But I thought it was interesting here that the demons, the daityas, are not considered expert. Of course, you talked about this a lot, how Kamsa was apparently successful, but actually not successful. And if we look at the world in general, it appears that the materialists are very expert. I mean, really, really expert. Their communication systems, their financial systems, their government systems, all of these far surpass anything that we've been able to do in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in terms of the external expertise. So what does it mean here in Bhagavatam that the demons are not expert? What does that mean exactly? I mean, if you say that everything's baffled, and you quoted that nice verse in Bhagavad Gita, how it's all baffled, but again, what does that mean? Because externally, anything everybody does becomes baffled. Devotee or demon, everybody dies. And whatever you create in this world is all temporary. I saw that in the old age home when my mother was dying. I remember going to one elderly lady, and I said, you know, you married? And she said, I think I was married. You know, how many children do you have? I had two. No, did I have three? And everything that she had accomplished in her life, I spoke to the nurses, and she was a very accomplished person, but she couldn't even remember it. What to speak of holding on to it? So what do we mean by they're not expert? So I was meditating on that ultimately expertise means using something for the way it's intended. That's ultimate expertise. And if just like if I have, you know, let's say a computer and I use it to hit you on the head with it, or I use it to hold the door open, you know, I may expertly hold the door open or expertly hit you on the head, but that's not actual expertise in using the computer. So the real test of success is not how long something endures, because bhutva bhutva praliyate, you know, it's all going to be finished. Even the external things we do in bhakti are going to be finished. That's not how one measures success. Nor is success measured in how well I apparently accomplish my particular immediate goals of appearing to be what you're saying, the controller, the proprietor, and the enjoyer. But expertise means how well I've aligned, and of course, this is also what you were saying, expertise means the foundation has to be truth. How well I'm aligning my own character, my behavior, my relationships, my things in the world, everything with truth. Because when everything's aligned with truth, what's the ultimate success is my result from that is eternal. Even when the external things degrade into dust, I keep what I've gotten from that. And everyone who's associated with me, they keep that eternally. And of course, the ultimate success is when I use things the way they're intended. Then I restore my relationship with Krishna. And when I restore my relationship with Krishna, yogik shema vaham yaham, then everything that I could want beyond millions and millions and millions of times over, everything I could want, I achieve forever in so much abundance that, like Prabhupada says, Krishna gives you with 10 hands, you can't even hold it all. Or like it says, King David says in the Bible, my cup runneth over. So much abundance that you're not even able to contain it. And that's expert. One who knows how to use this human body, human relationships, material objects, whatever talents and abilities we have, whatever exists, in such a way that we're totally aligned with what's true and what's real. So that was, I mean, you said it much better than I did, Marsh, but just out of respect for you, you asked me to speak something, so I thought I would add something.
It more expertly.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Prem Das Ji, would you like to say something, please? The microphone is coming. It's like a parampara.
Hari Bol. I guess, Maharaj, what I want to say more than anything is how delighted I am to be here, how honored I am to be amongst you all today. It's wonderful to hear your words, the words coming from you of Sri Rupa Goswami and reminding us how important satsang is. And I know that you said that there should be no envy amongst devotees, but in some sense I am feeling a bit of envy that you all have such a wonderful satsang. And I'm delighted to be part of that today. If there's anything in my life that I feel that I am personally longing for more and more these days, it is satsang. There are a variety of satsangs available to us. And as a scholar, I spend a lot of time with texts. And there is a kind of satsang that you can have in reading the words of those from the past. That's a valuable kind of satsang that brings a great deal of knowledge and love to us. But it's really this kind of satsang that matters so much, that turns a rod of iron into fire or ice. And I appreciated perhaps more than anything being reminded of that. And it tugs at my own heart's desire for much more satsang. So I'm only here for a couple days, but already just feeling the beauty of the satsang that you have right here, right now. Because I urge you all not to take that for granted, but to feel the transformative power that you all have here. And again, thank you so much for letting me be part of it for a couple days.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We will give a proper introduction to Professor Haberman during the afternoon program. He's one of the most prominent academic scholars in all of the Western world on bhakti and Vaishnavism and Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he's a living, sincere practitioner with a beautiful heart. And I'm just so grateful you have come. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a very nice class.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, you were mentioning both yesterday and today about how Kamsa was so fearful because he was attached, you know, to whatever he was having and whatever he was controlling over, and because he was having this propensity to enjoy. So Maharaj, the question that comes to my mind is that as grihasthas, you know, it's, who are practicing Krishna consciousness, we normally try to also remove fear from our lives and try to make things comfortable in such a way that we can practice our Krishna consciousness. And particularly in relation to money, there is always this tendency where we think that we should have a certain amount of money so that we can practice our Krishna consciousness properly without being disturbed, particularly towards the later part of our lives. And then there is this tendency on our side to work very hard in order to make adequate amount of money. And this is mainly because of the fear that is there in our heart that towards the end of our life, if you're not having adequate money to maintain our medical bills and, you know, to maintain our family or to get our son educated or daughter getting married, you know, then the doubt always remains in our mind, how much is required. So Maharaj, I just wanted to know whether this is a healthy fear or is it an unhealthy fear?
Healthy or unhealthy fear? It is healthy or unhealthy. If the fear is built on the foundation of an attitude wherein, how can I actually best serve Krishna? How could I actually facilitate service to Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas, then it's a healthy fear. If the attitude is based on the concept of something separate from pleasing Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas, if it's just about me, I and mine, then it is an unhealthy fear. It's like a home. Ambarish Maharaj lived in a magnificent palace. Yudhisthira Maharaj lived in a fantastic palace after the Kurukshetra War. So we read about kings who had incredible homes. But what was the nature of our Ambarish Maharaj? He used everything for Krishna. He raised his family for Krishna. He utilized whatever he had for Krishna. Kamsa also lived in a palace. These are two extremes. But it wasn't for Krishna's pleasure. It wasn't for Krishna's seva. So the palace was healthy for one and totally unhealthy for another. One of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, he worked really hard for a living and built a magnificent temple for his guru and for all the Vaishnavas with that money. So that money was very healthy. But somebody else uses whatever money they have for their own selfish, egoistic purposes. So real detachment is not about how we make our plans to utilize our funds and utilize our homes. It's the motivation. And not only the motivation, but the actual actualization of that motivation. One of our congregation has a beautiful home. I don't want to say his name because I don't want to embarrass him. And actually, when he and his wife and children became serious about Krishna consciousness, they didn't want anything better than the other devotees. They wanted to just move out and just live in a simple flat like everyone else. We told them that utilize this wonderful facility in Krishna consciousness, and you could create such a powerful impression that will transform people's hearts that you have all this, but you're living in it with such humility and such a desire to just use it all to serve others. And it has transformed so many hearts that otherwise could not have been reached. Maharaj Priyavrat was living on a mountain with Narada Muni as a brahmachari. Swayambhuva Manu said, we need you to be a king. That means you have to get married. That means you have to live in a palace. That means you have to do all the king's duties. Now you're just doing bhajan. So on one side, Narada Muni is teaching him how to be a renunciate. On the other side, Swayambhuva Manu is telling him you have to become a king. And these are both Mahajans. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. The path of perfection is to follow in the footsteps of Mahajans. But what do you do when two direct original Mahajans are giving you opposite instructions? It's not just a matter of where to hang your copins. This is his whole life. So what to do? This is the way the world is, even as devotees. It's dynamic. It's exciting. You don't get the same feedback from everyone. So then Lord Brahma, a third Mahajan, came. And he's father of Swayambhuva Manu, and he's the father and guru of Narada. And Brahma indicated he should be a king. Narada Muni, yes, yes. And he became king. So what was the difference between him living under a tree on a mountaintop and living in a magnificent palace? On one hand, just doing bhajan day and night in the satsang of his guru, and the other, ruling armies, raising children, serving a wife, taxing citizens, and everything else you do. But they were both purpose. They were both perfect. Because his fear, the healthy fear, is to fear Maya. To fear allowing our false ego to bring us down to that condition where we want to exploit Krishna's energy. To fear that kamsa propensity that's in our heart. To want to be, as Urmila Devi so expertly stated, the enjoyer, the proprietor, the controller, and exploit. We should fear that propensity that's within ourselves. And with that fear, we should take shelter of Krishna. That fear helps us to understand, I can't do it alone. Maya is too powerful. Daivihe shugunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. Mamevam ye papadyante mayam etat taramtite. This maya, this energy of the Lord, is insurmountable, extremely difficult to resist. But if we take shelter of Krishna, we can easily cross beyond it. Bhagavatam explains, trying to overcome Maya is like trying to swim across an ocean that has no shores and no bottom. But when we take shelter of Mukunda, Murari, then that ocean, Krishna makes it the size of the water contained in a hoof print of a calf. So that fear of material existence, of that exploitative tendency, can be a great impetus to help us to take shelter of Krishna and do the right thing. That fear is healthy. But when it's just a fear that I may lose something or I may die, then that fear is unhealthy. But if we're using our body for Krishna's service, and that's why we want to protect it, and we're raising our children in a spirit that these are Krishna's children, and giving them an education, giving them the tools by which they could serve Krishna and be happy in this world, that's Krishna consciousness. So as grihasthas, as householders, we have to be very responsible to see the whole picture. See the whole picture of what my responsibilities are. Grihasthas are responsible for the physical condition of their families too. But it shouldn't be based on greed or ego or lust or envy. It should be based on seva. And for that we need good association. We need good sadhana so that we have right discrimination. And we should consult. We should consult people we trust. Does that answer your question? Hari. You see, for grihasthas, it's not that the answers to our questions are necessarily going to be specific. You should put this much money here and this much money there, and you should rent out this flat, and you should keep this flat, and you should save this for later, and you should give this away because it's illusion, and you should feed your children bindi sabji. On Thursdays and Saturdays, and you should give them aloo sabji on Monday. No. What you get are principles. What are the principles? And then our sincerity is how we honestly and sincerely apply those principles to our life. That's how we make spiritual progress. Is there one more question?
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I want to know, while reading Prabhupada's book, we repeatedly come along the saying that soul is the superior energy of Lord, and at the same time, body is a material energy. And material energy is inferior, and soul is superior. But both the energies belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So how can Krishna possess an inferior energy and superior energy? Because he is superior, how can he has an inferior energy?
Hare Krishna. Om Purnam Adapurnam Idam. Sri Ishopanishad tells that the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and therefore everything that is emanating from the Absolute Truth is perfect and complete. In the 10th chapter of Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante bambudha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna tells, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Janmadyasha yataha, the Absolute Truth is from whom everything has emanated. So So from a spiritual perspective, we understand. And actually, Krishna tells in Gita, Daivihesu gunamayi mama maya duratiya. He says, this divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. So Krishna's telling that maya is divine, and that maya is my energy. And this is the beauty of Vaishnava philosophy. We understand that anything that emanates from Krishna is real. This microphone is real. It's not an illusion. It's the inferior energy because it has a beginning and an end. Apparently, actually matter never dies, just changes. The elements of this microphone will never cease. They're just transformed into a different, you know, doesn't work anymore, it gets thrown in some garbage area and then it's reprocessed and it deteriorates and it merges back into the elements. Yes? So these elements of earth, water, fire, air, ether, that's permanent. But the manifestations that the elements take are temporary. So the inferior energy in this sense, what's ever changing? What has no consistency? And the superior energy is the eternal soul, which is unchanging, which is immortal, eternal, always as it is. Inferior is when the eternal energy identifies itself as this ever-changing. That's maya, not that which is not. When I identify myself with this body, that is illusion. But when I understand that I'm in this body, and I use this body for the purpose of the soul, seva, samsiddhir haritoshanam, to please Krishna, that's truth. And when we use material energy for the service of Krishna, bhakti, we transform material energy into spiritual energy. Yoga, we're reconnecting to its actual purpose. Because ultimately everything is Krishna's. When we recognize that everything is Krishna's, and we recognize that it's meant to be used in harmony for Krishna's will, then we actually, yoga, we're seeing its spiritual potential. And then in that sense, we actually perceive the superior energy inherent within the apparent inferior energy. Srila Prabhupada used the example with a microphone. If I'm speaking about Krishna and enlightening people in devotion with this microphone, then this microphone is superior energy. But if we use this microphone, you know, to sing about, what are they called? Gazelles or something like that? Huh? Gazelle. Romantic songs about how I want to like that. then the microphone is material energy. It's inferior energy. So when the inferior energy is seen, recognized, and utilized for the superior purpose, then it becomes the superior energy. It's perfect and complete. So the inferior energy, on one level, it's the superior energy that's transformed into temporary ever-changing phenomena. But when we see it as all coming from Krishna and for Krishna Seva, then we're seeing the superior spiritual potential within it. And that's the perfection of life. The body, everything in the world is sacred if we see it as Krishna's. The deity is pure spiritual energy because the deity is Krishna and Radharani, Radha Gopinath. It's not symbolic manifest, it's not symbolic statues. Radha and Krishna are 100% full-fledged there, as the, not in the deities, as the deities. But how do we see them with our eyes? Because our eyes can only see the external energy, because the eyes are made out of external energy. But Krishna is so merciful. You know, before these deities, if you go to Jaipur, you see these people just chipping away at marble, like... Very. That must have been Vishwakarma doing that. So they're just taking a big piece of marble out of some mine in the mountains of Jaipur. So it's just a piece of marble. But then they carve it into the deity, and then the devotees do prana pratishtha, and then the deity is Krishna and Sri Radha. So is the deity marble, or is the deity Satchidananda Vigraha? The deity is Satchidananda Vigraha in the form of marble. So in other words, the marble is transformed into Satchidananda Vigraha because that's the power of spiritual potency. What is that art? What is that verse? That if you see Arche Vishnu Shiladhya Gurushu Narapantir Vaishnavi Jati Buddhi. Hellish mentality is to see the deity as made of stone or wood. The deity is Krishna. Hellish mentality is to see the spiritual master as an ordinary person. Yadubar Prabhu was talking about Srila Prabhupada, who was the guru of our whole society. He was on his last days. His body was emaciated. And Prabhupada, one devotee came in and was shocked to see Prabhupada like that. He was a scientist, Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. He was emaciated. He was in the last days. Prabhupada smiled. He said, "This is evidence of what I was teaching you, that the body will fade, but I'm still the same." You don't like to see lessons in that form, Prabhupada. To see the guru as an ordinary person, even though he may be coughing and he may be sneezing and he has to go to the bathroom and all these things. Because his body is used in Krishna's service. It's transcendental, totally transcendental. You serve the guru's body, and that's mad bhakta puja pyadika. Krishna says, serve my devotee. It gives me more happiness than serving me. And serving devotee, the medium is through the body. Vapu. And to see a Vaishnava according to caste or creed or mundane consideration is a mentality from hell. Haridas Thakur was coming from a Yavana Malecha background. He was an untouchable by the caste system. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, "I'm touching you for my purification." He made him the Namacharya. Body was spiritual. So these bodies are sacred. If we actually understand that it's Krishna's energy used for the medium of Krishna's service. And the temple. What makes the temple different than the tavern? What do you call it in India? Bar, pub, I don't know. I've never been to one in India. But what makes the difference between the temple and that? Maybe the same stone, the same wood, from the same tree. But one is being used for Krishna, and it's considered Krishna's abode. And the other is the abode of sin. So this energy is divine when we see it in relationship with Krishna. But when we have inferior vision, then we forget the inherent divinity within ourselves and within everything. Srila Prabhupada would write, "I hope this letter meets you in good health." Health? He was concerned with our physical health, our emotional health, and our spiritual health. And physical health is important. Because if we have physical health, this body, if it's healthy, it's a medium by which we can do incredible devotional service. So it's sacred. Does that answer your question? Thank you. So I think we should end here because our next program is starting in a few minutes. Okay, one more thing, just to end. Prasad is waiting for you downstairs. Khichdi? I was at this conference of powerful great yogis in Bangalore just about a week ago. And one very, very well-known scholar, professor, very much connected to the yoga scene, he came up to me and said, "I came to your temple in Chopati, Bombay." And you know, so many people tell me they come, but I don't know if they've actually come. But I know 100% for sure that this person came. Because he said, "I came to your temple and I ate breakfast of the most delicious khichdi I've ever had." So, why is this khichdi so special? Because all over India there's khichdi. Right? You can't escape khichdi in India. But still, people come from, they drive through traffic all across Bombay just to eat the khichdi of this temple. Because this is khichdi prasad. And what is prasad? We may get our rice from the same bag of rice from a vendor where so many other people are cooking khichdi. The same dal from the same vendor, and the same spices. But because it's cooked with love and devotion for the purpose of offering to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and Srinathji, and because they're eating that khichdi, they're accepting patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Because it's offered with devotion, Krishna accepts it, and by his will, it becomes completely transcendental spiritual element. It's divine. It can purify our hearts. If we just have Mahaprasadi Govinde, Nama Brahmani Vaishnavi. If we just have faith in the power of Prasad and the holy name, we could be liberated. Srila Prabhupada said, if you have this right consciousness, we can eat our way back to Godhead. It's not the this khichdi is not inferior energy. It is Mahaprasad, Krishna's divine spiritual energy in the form of his mercy. So now please eat your khichdi to your full satisfaction. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much, but Govinda Prabhu has an announcement.
Hare Krishna, it's a very important